It's not playing with Lex and Dan.
Welcome back to Not Playing with Lex and Dan. I am your friendly neighborhood co-host, Dan, and I'm joined as ever by my friendly co-host, Lex Friedman.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Lex.
I am fairly friendly. I would agree with that assessment.
Well, you're fairly. That's all I can really say about it.
It's true. Well, it's Not Playing, wherein you and I together watch movies that pretty much everybody else in the world has seen, but that somehow we have missed.
Indeed.
But we're not the only two people in the podcasting world to have failed to see movies that most of the rest of the universe has already watched and enjoyed.
Oh, I think we are.
No.
What?
In fact, there are others.
What? I don't believe it.
It's true. Dan, we have a special guest on today's episode. Jason Snell wasn't available. So
we got with someone with the same initials.
Right. We needed a JS. And so we are joined today by John S. I won't say his last name because he always says I say it wrong.
John Siracusa.
Please. I'm ashamed enough to be on this show.
You should be.
We say that to each other every week.
Weekly, yes. You're only our second special guest of all time, but you might be the specialist. I don't know. But we've picked a movie that somehow none of the three of us have seen, although I think a lot of people probably have seen this movie. We can't tell you about it because we don't know anything.
John Siracusa, how old were you when Scarface came out in 1983?
Oh, I don't know. I thought the whole thing was we don't look at like the IMDb page or anything. I've looked at nothing. No, of course, I know a little bit about the movie, but I don't know the release date.
Oh, so it was released in 83. I don't know when in 83, but how old would you have been in 83?
I don't know. I can't do that kind of math. 9 years old?
Oh, it was December 83, so I actually was 3 by that point.
I was also 3.
So I guess you guys weren't going to the theater to see this. I guess. I wasn't either, but it seems like a movie I should have seen, which is why.
Probably not on release, but yeah.
But John, you think that you know a bit about this movie. I feel like I know Al Pacino's in it. I think this is the one where he's like, say hello to my little friend.
Yep, that's what everybody knows about it.
And I know nothing else. Like, I think it's about cocaine, and he's a drug lord.
Yeah, he's a drug dealer. I think I can tell you his name is Tony Montana. I did know that.
Oh, I thought that was the guy from You Killed My Father, Prepare to Die.
I thought it was the guy in Hunt for Red October who really wanted to see Montana. I thought he meant Tony Montana.
No, that was the guy from Jurassic Park.
Oh, right.
I think you're thinking of.
Sam Neill, yes. Right. Slash Dr. Allen something. I can't remember. I have seen Jurassic Park. I just can't remember it. What else do you know about this, John? Anything else?
Well, it seems like a movie that I should have seen because I've seen all of like the organized crime movies and all the gangster movies, even though this is not, it's a different strain of gangster movie. But this is right in
a
that
fairly
section of movies.
Strain.
Like, have you seen, the Godfather movies, Goodfellas, Casino? Those are later, but like the Godfather movies were the 70s. And so like this is right in the type of movie that I should have seen. And I'm sure I've seen many different scenes from this movie. The famous scene, Say Hello to My Little Friend, all sorts of other things. But I'm pretty darn sure I have never seen the entire thing all the way through. And I certainly have no memory of it. Like, all I can picture is that one scene with the gun in my head. That's
See,
it.
I've seen all the other movies you referenced, which I don't think Dan has, but I've seen Goodfellas and the Godfather movies and Casino. But I've definitely not seen any scenes from Scarface.
Well, the Untouchables is in that same thing. You guys watch that for the show, right?
Like, yeah.
Crime movies.
And in fact, I will tell you, because I happen to know this, that this is also a Brian De Palma movie.
Mm.
So there's some crossover there. I'm looking forward to Kevin Costner being in this movie somewhere.
He plays the cocaine.
It's
best performance of his career.
The biggest knock I have against this movie is that it's 3 hours long. And
you haven't even seen it yet. You can't have a knock against it.
I think it's going to be really
all three
violent.
Hours are gold.
My expectation is going to be like extremely bloody and violent. Lots of shooting deaths.
Well, we'll know if Lex doesn't like it, then it's a good movie. Because if we've learned anything from two seasons of the show, it's that Lex does not like good movies.
I liked Hudson.
Yeah,
all right.
Let me just say that John Siracusa's payment schedule is very, very convenient for me to be able to pay him off like that. It's very handy. Well, given that the movie is 3 hours long and that we know nothing about it, we should probably kick this off. So we are watching on Amazon And we've gotten ourselves just after the Universal logo has faded to black. Our time code says 2 hours and 50 minutes on the dot.
Remaining.
All right. So if everybody's ready, we're going to press play in 3, 2, 1. Well, gentlemen,
Dan and John, I have some good news for you.
Tell us.
You have now seen the 1983 classic Scarface.
So I'm curious. So, like, I noticed when I was doing, you know, searches on Amazon earlier, there is an earlier version of Scarface, which is directed by Howard Hawks, who they thank at the end there.
Yes.
Which I assumed this was a So this is technically is a remake of a 1932 film.
Yeah.
Which is actually about Al Capone.
Right. They're both inspired by Al Capone, I believe.
Interesting.
The first question, of course, is what did you think?
I thought it was interesting. I kind of see what they were going for here. In some ways, it is kind of like a... it's like a shot at the... as like a Shakespearean tragedy in some ways, sort of transplanted into a modern day. Like... you know, basically, this guy ruins his own life by reaching for too much. I think the trick is that it's heavily so 80s, just so 80s, that it's hard to separate that from it. So in some ways, although I'm sure this was, you know, really, really important at the time and significant, it's hard to divorce it from its time period.
You can't blame the time period because the Godfather movies were made in the 70s and they were fantastic.
Yeah,
right?
one could argue the 70s is a...
but they're fantastic. Yeah. This movie, like, yeah, you're right. I think it was trying to go for this, you know, this tragic, you know, this life that starts off. I mean, they wanted to start off promising, but he always starts off as a thug. And then he rises through the ranks and then he falls. But it's just, like, I think the reason it had such notoriety and fame is because maybe back then, like, the gore and the chainsawing scenes and people would talk about that and stuff, but that's not shocking or interesting to us, and all we're left is with the script, which is nothing, the performances, which are not great, and the story arc, which has no real likable characters, and it's just, like, I mean, Al Pacino was in those Godfather movies, and then he does this? Ugh, big thumbs down for me.
Wow. That's hard. Incidentally, I'm looking at a picture of Oliver Stone on the wiki page, which
he looks like
Ernie.
He looks a lot like Ernie.
But he also says he wrote the script while struggling with his own addiction to cocaine, which probably explains all the, like, porn shots of cocaine in this movie. Yeah. Like, yeah, this is great. Now what we need, more cocaine.
Although, you know, if you're going to go like a flop house on this, it's almost kind of a good bad movie because it was unintentionally funny in many parts.
I see. I would even believe that it was intentionally funny in some of those parts. Maybe not all, but I think that the movie has a sense of humor. But I would say, in a surprising note, I won't be as critical as you, John. I do find myself asking kind of why. You know, why have we made this movie, and why are we showing these things this way?
Why
but
is it so well-known?
I thought that the acting was decent across some of the characters, and I thought the writing actually was pretty good.
Yeah, so apparently this was X-rated in North America early on.
For what?
No, they had not the version we saw, I don't think.
No, it was because of the violence, including the chainsaw scene.
Right, like, that's why I think this movie had notoriety, because the things it did were shocking and transgressive at
transgressive,
the time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But now are not at all, and all you're left with is the... You thought Michelle Pfeiffer's acting performance was good? I thought it was a mess.
I thought Michelle Pfeiffer was not good. I thought Al Pacino was good.
He could not pull off the accent. He was okay, but, like, we've seen him in similar roles before, almost the exact same kind of arc over the course of two much, much better movies.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree with John, especially because of the fact that he is so unsympathetic, because in some ways he gets everything that he wants, right? And it's like, no, it's not enough for him.
I don't believe him as a mastermind. I don't believe his desire to rise through the ranks. I don't get what they were trying to sell on the, you know, I've come to this country. He seems to get what he wants just by being angry and cursing a lot. And that's just not a convincing, you know, organized crime
story. I thought that whole scene where he, you know, where he, when he goes and is negotiating the deal overseas that he shouldn't be negotiating by himself, I thought that he showed some business acumen there. He's negotiating over who's going to get it where.
I didn't buy him as a character being that smart in that scene. Like, they hadn't established that this was a kind of character who's savvy and who's going to, you know, I mean, it's just so hard not to compare this to, like, Goodfellas and The Godfather because of the time period and the subject matter and the lead actor.
I don't think he's smart so much as I think, you know, he makes the whole point of just being sort of ballsy, right? Like, that's, he just says things that are, you know, again, sort of transgressive and like, yeah, I'm just going to sort of tell it straight.
And everyone's like, oh, well, you said curse words and we're mean, so I guess what can we do? Like, Frank would, like, you don't, if Frank was in charge of everything, he wouldn't have taken that from him. You don't go up to the big crime boss and say, well, actually, I'm very angry and tough.
I agree with you that I feel like things happen to him a lot more than he makes them happen. Like, where, especially that part, like, where they drop the other guy out of the helicopter, and it's like, yeah, we decided to, you know, not drop you out of the helicopter, so I guess you're in charge now,
yeah,
right?
We decided not to chainsaw you earlier, so I guess you're the person who lives for the rest of this movie.
Yeah, he does luck out a lot, and I do think he doesn't show any particular acumen at the business, and definitely, as you know, as the movie goes on and he gets more and more important, it does seem like his so much of the stuff that it seems to be that he's good at seems like it's off screen. Like, we're given his, like, oh yes, now he has this giant house and he made
all
this
money. How does he manage his organized crime? How does he deal with the politics of the different gangs and wherever? He's Sonny the whole movie. He just gets angry at everybody and wants to kill him. That's the solution to everything. And we never see it happening. And we never even get the feeling that he's much of a leader or the people are looking up to. His crew is a bunch of puffy doofs who are not, you know, very smart or interesting in their own rights.
I enjoy the, according to the AMC, like, behind-the-scenes stuff they list, Cher loved it. Lucille Ball came with her family, hated it because of the graphics, violence, and language, and Dustin Hoffman was said to have fallen asleep. Kurt Vonnegut and John Irving were among those who allegedly walked out and discussed after the chainsaw scene. Scorsese turned to Stephen Bauer in the middle of the film and told him, you guys are great, but be prepared because they're going to hate it in Hollywood because it's about them. See, Scorsese liked it.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe in his Mean Streets phase. Mean Streets was a better movie than this, too. Who am I kidding?
This is what I'm saying. Al Pacino's character, you very quickly learn, is kind of, you know, stock and rote, right? He's extremely short-tempered. He's grumpy. He wants nothing special or unique. And he gets his way by swearing and by getting angry really quickly and by being, I guess, motivated to get his way. Being brazen enough to say, hey, I'm going to sit down with Michelle Pfeiffer and just tell her she should marry me while she's married.
Yeah,
but he wasn't charming. Like, he wasn't charming to women.
He's got that one scene with the hat. That's it.
Right.
That's literally it.
I understand the criticism. At the same time, I feel like, as written, Pacino commits to the role in a nice way. I thought Pacino does a nice job in the role. It's a weird guy who's got very little depth to him that we get to see, but I thought that he, accent aside, I thought that he committed to the role.
It's not his fault. The movie is just not structured to show him as being a person who you can believe rising to the ranks. The whole thing about this movie was the violence and also showing, look at how ostentatious this is. I mean, it's the 80s, right? So look, he started small. We saw him in that little camp thing under the freeway, and now he's got this ridiculous house where everything's gold and this giant piles of cocaine, which I think weren't supposed to be as funny as they are in retrospect.
but he's not happy about any of it, and that's what makes him frustrated.
Right, but
what is
his existential angst? Like, did he once aspire to greatness and realize greatness had slipped away? We don't know what he wanted. He came to this country, like, what is his motivation? It's like his whole motivation coming to this country was, I want to have a terrible end where I'm killed in my villa after killing all of my friends. Who really, like, the relationship between him and Manny, they didn't establish that they are such great friends. He kind of just used Manny. Manny was kind of a nice guy who was there.
Right.
Like the rest of his crew, he wasn't. It's just, it doesn't.
And as we discussed
together
at length, the whole situation with his sister just doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah. They didn't establish it. If you're going to make it some sort of incest thing, then establish it. Don't have it at the very end to go, because it starts off totally as like, oh, I am just protecting my sister because I'm an overprotective brother. But then also, I'm going to kill the guy.
I wonder if the fact that he spent so much time recutting it, because apparently, like, three different times to get out of the X rating, I wonder if they lost, you know, other. It does at times feel a bit disjointed and as though there are things we talked about that we're not seeing. And so I'm curious to know if it made more sense or it was just really literally more violence.
I think they need fewer characters because they had too many, or just more interesting characters.
Definitely
because
more interesting characters.
Like, Frank wasn't that interesting. The Bolivian guy, whatever. Like, Michelle Pfeiffer was kind of in and out. You can cut her whole part. And, like, Tony have relationships with?
They
like,
dip into
barely
interesting stuff. Like, I felt like that last scene with the Bolivians where he's got, like, the whole coterie of people who are really you know, jeopardized by this drug deal. There's an interesting angle in there, but they spend, you know, 10 minutes on it.
You need to watch Godfather 2, okay. Dan, so you can cleanse yourself. And not on this podcast, but in a conducive atmosphere to see exactly what this movie wishes it was so badly. But the same freaking actor!
Hey, Ebert gave it 4 stars out of 4 in his review, apparently.
I think people were just bowled over by the things that this movie did first.
I will say,
biggest.
Credit to Leonard Maltin was among those critics who held a negative opinion of Scarface, gave the film 1.5 stars out of 4, stating that, quote, Scarface wallows in excess and unpleasantness for nearly 3 hours and offers no new insights except that crime doesn't pay. At least the 1932 movie moved. Zing!
Yeah, I mean, that... People might have been put off by the violence and everything, but I think he nailed it in that, like, what is the movie saying? What is it? Is it? It has... We don't get wrapped up in the characters so that we're, like, sad when they, like, oh, it went so tragically wrong. It seemed like it could have... never seemed like it could have gone right. He always seemed like he was on the wrong path from the first scene. Like, he was never on his way to anything.
Well, his first decision is to murder, like, yeah, oh, we can get you out of this camp if you just murder this guy. And he's like, yep, that's fine.
Someone gave you a bag of guns to hide. Watch the movie, Dan.
I mean, I think that at the end of the day, there are too many characters who aren't interesting. And by the way, I think it's exciting to note, John, that Manny, who you thought was Travolta-esque, they wanted John Travolta to do that part.
Yeah, wise choice, John. So wait for Hank for Pulp Fiction. It'll seem like it's going to be dark for a long time, but it'll come around.
But they,
you get to do Face Off.
There's like in any movie that's about gangsters of any sort, there's nobody to really root for, right?
No, there's people to root for. Who's not rooting for Michael Corleone? Who's not rooting for Ray Liotta in Goodfellas?
No, you can't root for Ray Liotta. He's a terrible person in that movie. But
you're rooting for
being,
him because, like, in that movie they establish what is the attraction to this life. Why would you ever want to do this? And can you know good times do exist, but then things go bad, and they go bad for reasons like it's your own fault. Like they could have been good, but you lost it, right? And there's none of that arc in this movie. It starts off bad. It's always
I don't agree with you, right? Because Pacino, at least, you see what he wants. He gets the opulent lifestyle that he's craving. He says that he wants the
But why does he even want that?
To me, and I think it's under... I'm in the position of defending the movie, which I did not think was that good. But I think that what they're trying to go for is he is motivated by wanting to steal the guy's wife. He wants to get with Michelle Pfeiffer. And he's decided that the way to get women is to get the money and the power. And so that's his whole thing is to get her. And then once he has her, he doesn't even
like
her.
He's
made a tremendous
mistake. That's the problem. He doesn't like he's infatuated with her. They have no chemistry. Yeah. And that doesn't make any...
And Miami is filled with women, and you do not need to be a multimillionaire
of them. He wants her because it's she's his boss's wife, right? Like,
yeah,
wants what Frank had. I think that's what it comes down to is he always, he's constantly, his reach constantly exceeds his grasp where he's like, oh yeah, that guy's got this stuff. I want that stuff.
But he never seems happy. Like,
he's not a well-adjusted drug dealer. I agree with you.
Yeah. And like, not only does he not seem happy, like I said, I don't believe him as the mastermind of this criminal organization. I just do not believe that this character as played and as written would be the leader of this. He seems like barely one of the low-level henchmen. He wouldn't last very long as
that. That's the one place where we most dramatically disagree, because I feel like the whole point of that scene where he's negotiating against the other guy's wishes on Frank's behalf is showing you that he's got the business acumen.
He doesn't. He's just got bravado and stupidity, and that in a good organized crime movie that would get you killed real quick, and not like, oh well, you know, you suddenly said no, I will not take your deal. You're only paying me this amount of money. I'm going to pay you more. The guy would drive away. Like, you don't get anywhere in the world by just demanding that. You know, he's not in that position.
No, he was shrewd.
He
was negotiating when he didn't
work your way up to that.
He's aided by the fact that apparently that guy is a police informant, right? You know, or is he? I mean, I guess that's sort of left ambiguous, which is a weird decision to do. But, like, you know, he's the only man standing at the end, too, right? So I don't know that he's so much impressed by his business acumen as he is like, well, I'm not dealing with that other guy because he's totally an informant.
And if you're going to succeed by being muscle, like, you're actually going to go the sort of, Al Capone type route, where the way you win is, like, being willing to kill and having... You have to have muscle. Like, that's one possible route to power, but he never had muscle. He had this tiny crew of ineffectual
guys.
His crew
is terrible.
And, if you're just like, okay, well, I'm not interested in keeping the peace. I'm going to become the biggest organized crime boss because I'm going to be willing to kill everybody else. And pretty soon people will realize, hey, don't mess with me because I just kill everybody. You got to have muscle for that. And you got to have people who respect you. Otherwise, the muscle kills you and they get in charge. Like, why wouldn't that muscle do the same strategy as him? You know, like Boardwalk Empire is doing a better job of over many, many seasons giving an Al Capone arc, and that is one viable strategy for rise to power. But even in that movie, Al Capone, or that show, Al Capone is more likable than this Al Pacino.
I gotta say, I really like the fact that did anyone realize apparently the silent hitman at the end has a name? He is the Skull.
Yeah, that's real important.
They spent a lot of time building that character.
It's nothing like introducing a new character at the end of the movie in slow motion and
right.
make us care that he's killing him.
And then they focus on him, and he's like so over the top too. Yeah, I wasn't impressed with that.
Yeah,
I thought he just. I think it's a better movie overall, although still not a great movie. If he simply gets like one of the people anonymously guns him down.
Actually, I think it's a better movie if his sister kills him. Honestly.
No, see, that I don't agree with, because, like, her whole situation didn't make any sense.
No, I agree with that, but, like, in some ways, it's, you know, the one thing that he spent all this time protecting is the one thing that actually...
That's true.
Or if the tiger had eaten him. I'm with John on that one. I would have gone with that as well.
Okay, it at least goes surreal. And, like, so the final shot of, like, look at what has happened, this beautiful house, and it's covered with blood, and he's in this pool at the bottom of the statue with the slow... Like, Taxi Driver did that. They did the big crane from above shot showing the carnage, like... If this movie had come before all those movies, then maybe, but it came after. It's just a dim echo of the things that were good about those movies.
So I don't know why people keep watching this movie.
Yeah,
I'm proud of myself for not having seen this now. I feel like I had missed out on a classic just because somehow I didn't see it, so that'd be the perfect movie. But now I realize I must have unconsciously been avoiding this.
Yeah, you're all over. Well,
it's taste, subconscious taste.
Next season, we'll have to watch the 1932 version.
Yeah. No.
Oh, but John, I thought you liked it, Lex.
No, I mean, I didn't think it was as bad as John Syracuse thought it was, but I did not think it was good.
My distaste for it is not... It's not like it was such a terrible movie that, like, if this in isolation. It's just that because there are so many similar movies touching on the same topics that are so much better, and that I don't give it the excuse of the 80s.
If you compare this movie to something like Goodfellas or The Godfather, certainly this movie is terrible compared to those. But I don't know. It's. I don't think it's. I like it more than I like The Hunt for Red October.
Whoa!
No way! Crazy.
I'm with John on this one.
Crazy. No, because The Hunt for Red October, you get caught up in. Like, it's schlocky. It's 80s or whatever. But name another better action adventure submarine movie. You can't. Like, it's Hunt for Red October and maybe Crimson Tide.
Maybe Crimson Tide. No,
and maybe Das Boot, depending on what mood you're in.
Yeah, except that's really. Isn't that also really long?
Yes, that's also really long.
I will say though, Dan. Despite Syracuse's claim, I think before we were even recording, I liked a lot of the movies we watched together this season.
That's, I mean, yeah.
Dan picks better movies than you.
No, hey, episode 2 was Moon. Moon was a great movie.
Yep. Moon was a good movie. I'll give you that. That was probably
I'd
forgotten that was you, but yeah.
We started with Fargo, which was good. I didn't love L.A. Confidential.
You didn't even like Fargo, though.
I don't understand that L.A. Confidential. To me, that's still... You're blowing my mind on that still. Like, everybody I talked to afterwards is like, he's crazy. That's a great
Fargo
movie.
Fargo is a better movie than L.A. Confidential. I can understand being a little bit off-putting, but...
Thank you.
I don't know if I agree with you on that one.
L.A. Confidential is a little bit more silly. Fargo is a little... I think Fargo is more interesting.
Dan, you did not like Twins? Were you tolerated Twins?
Twins is totally...
This is what you're making him watch, Twins.
Yeah, Twins, I mean, it was entertaining.
What's next, our mama from the
train? It's funny from a ridiculous point of view, but I think I probably spent more time laughing at that movie than with
it. Right. Hudson Hawk I liked. Beetlejuice, really, I'm
I don't think either of us like
I haven't seen that in ages, so I will trust your opinion. It doesn't hold up.
Just disastrous.
I kept trying to convince people this past week as we were talking about it that it was really bad. And they're like, no, I really liked that movie as a kid. I'm like, you haven't seen it.
When you were describing the plot, I'm like, really? That was the plot? That's messed up.
it's messed up, and it's not, it's creepy, like, and not in a good way, but in like a Tim Burton like.
No, I have good memories of the movie, too. I remember laughing at it. I remember thinking my eating is funny, but I'm totally convinced that if I were to rewatch it, I would not like it.
Don't watch it. Leave the memory. Army of Darkness, I liked and was surprised by.
Also good.
There's something about Mary. You actually laughed out loud during.
At parts.
It has funny parts.
It was above Twins.
I want to say. So then it was Hunt for October, which we discussed, and then I brought Glengarry Glenn Ross to the table,
which is good. No,
that's kind of cheating.
That's good. I
mean, how's that cheating?
Pacino in a better role.
Everybody knows
say.
That's a good movie. It's not like.
But it was good. Pacino in a better role. That's a very different role for Pacino.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, in that movie, you would see, like, if the Al Pacino character from that movie set out to build a criminal enterprise, I think we'd all believe it, right?
Effectively, he did, just a different kind. A legal criminal enterprise. Man, oh, man. Well, Al Pacino's good.
I think we all agree on that much.
Yeah. I like
some, better in some things.
Better
others.
In this movie or in Scent of a Woman?
I haven't seen Scent of a Woman.
Scent of a Woman, I feel like gets into caricature. I
yeah,
feel like
so
he's
that's that is
himself.
The canonical. Like he travels all the way from Michael Corleone to a caricature of himself, which is Scent of a Woman. Right. So what point is this in the transition?
Wait, what about like is he's in one of the Ocean's movies too? Like is if you're talking Al Pacino character, he's the bad guy in like the second or third one. But he's like kind of a caricature.
Yeah, exactly. They needed over the top Pacino, and they got him.
Has he made a good movie in the last few years? Like, I'm trying to even think of what I've seen him in.
He was apparently good in the Phil Spector TV movie.
Yeah. Wow.
I liked him in. Man, that's a long time ago though. I was gonna say I liked him in Insomnia.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ocean's 13 was the last movie I saw him in, and that was in 2007.
Yeah, he doesn't do a lot.
He was good in Any Given Sunday.
He played Jack Kevorkian, too.
Yes, that he's actually very good in that. That's another TV movie.
I don't think I want to. I think I'll pass. He played Shylock really in good. The Merchant of Venice in 2004. He played Roy Cohn.
Righteous Kill, yeah. He's not made good
choices.
That
one was supposed to be bad. He was in Geely?
Hey, who
he
was
in Geely.
Yeah, he was the devil in The Devil's Advocate, right?
That's way back more. Though.
That's, is that the Keanu Reeves movie?
Yeah. No. Yeah. I've seen that.
I saw that too. Dan, how did we pick which movies we've seen? Why did we see The Devil's Advocate?
You know, that's one of those things I definitely walked in when it was like in college, and it's like, oh, it's on. I guess I'll, take a look at that.
Well, it's been an exciting season of not playing with Lex and Dan and John Siracusa.
It is. I look forward to our next season of Lex and Dan and John Siracusa.
Next season, John gets to pick all the movies, I think.
I don't want you to watch any really good movies in this environment where you're just talking over it the whole time. It's disrespectful. Dan needs to watch Godfather Part 2 on his own with talking over it.
I want to say, though, this felt like the right movie to do it, though.
Yeah,
like, you didn't feel like you missed out.
That's why I said it's almost a good bad movie.
Right.
Yeah, I'm very pleased. I'm glad because I know you were very conflicted coming in, John. You're like, do we talk over the movie? But then we missed the dialogue.
I had no problem talking over this thing. It did not pull me in at all.
I think my biggest disappointment is how late I've stayed up to see this movie.
I can see that. Well, we won't keep you guys around too much longer. Let's thank our special guest, John Siracusa.
Thanks, John Siracusa.
Thanks, John.
I was excited to be on. I was ashamed that I hadn't seen this movie, but now I'm proud that I didn't see it.
Do you want to say anything about like programming languages or processors, or are you good?
I don't know. How much time you got?
Can you give us the short version of your upcoming Yosemite review? like 8 words or less.
It's free. Download it.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll take it. Lex, it's been a pleasure of having another season of watching movies with you. I look forward to, in the future, watching more movies with you.
Hey, even if nobody listens, watching movies with you is a reward all its own.
That's great. We're renaming the podcast Nobody's Listening with Lex and Dan. And thank you to those of you who are listening. We don't mean to demean your contribution. And we'll see you next season.
At the movies. Wow, he looks like Gruber in this scene. Doesn't he?
He's lost weight. Come on.
Now it's all I can see.
Oh,
even
now
more
I
now.
See it. Now I see it. I'm glad the 7 people who listen to your podcast know who Gruber is, and we'll get that joke.